I guess the one on waterfront, just to, before we leave, it's on page 55 in our book. And I think it's a previous council that limited service. You've still got one. It's like the Fox Farm Road, I guess. It's WF32, and then it's got LS. Is the LS still applicable anywhere?
No.
Okay.
Page 56, it should be truck or bus terminal. Was it added new?
Truck or bus, okay. And the chart on 58, just?
Back to 9512.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we can say that for all of the charts. Return to.
Yeah. The C1.21H. I'd asked a number of years ago if that H was still on. Is that the Public Works?
Where are you? Huh?
Sorry, it's on 59 at the top. It's the C.12-1H, Park Lot 20, Concession A. Looking at the mapping, it looked like it was the Public Works Garage.
Is this the one just down 124?
Right. I wonder if that H still being on there.
Why was that zone put on in the first place?
Well, you might know. I don't know.
You want me to check it?
Yeah.
Like, it still is the Public Works Garage.
Right. Yeah. It was the school.
Yeah.
But.
Do you remember when council meetings were held there?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
That's where our first library started, in the cloakroom. And aerobics classes, I guess, or exercise classes of some sort. Many functions.
So I'll find out, but we have no recollection of why this was zoned this way? Was it ever up for sale or something? I don't know.
Previous council talked about it, I think, but I think the age was put on years and years ago when I first started doing this, and I wasn't sure why. But under this one, I have 16.18. Let's see, the Keller Country one. They used to be, now it's just a C1.2, but it used to be a special provision for the limited number of uses. Now, maybe the limited number of uses are the same as the C1.2, I don't know.
It's a cottage now, isn't it?
Yeah. Which I don't know if that even fits in there.
It's still commercial, isn't it?
Yeah. But we don't have a special provision, yeah. We just put it in a commercial category?
Yeah.
I'll check the difference between the two. Yeah, if they're the same, we'll leave it, but if it's different, I'll put it in an exception. There was gas there at one time, too, wasn't there?
Oh, yeah.
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 Post office.
On the first commercial establishment or tourist establishment. Subject to provisions of section 348. I'm not sure that's the same section anymore. I know it's troublesome. But if you look up 348, I'm not sure that deals with tourist establishment.
No, usually we change it to generic wording.
Right.
Yeah.
Now for this one, I have a few questions on the exceptions. On the C2. 1643. Not sure it's in your chart. That's the one I think the council technically was referring to earlier.
Yeah, it's not in the chart. What does that mean? Did it go away on its own? You know which property that was like? What that referred to? 1643?
I think. You know which one it is.
That's Sleeping Cabin we were talking about?
Yeah.
Is that 1643?
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay, well, the Sleeping Cabin's still there.
Yeah. But now it's a storage shed because it's below the 108 square feet. Because you couldn't have that building on there without a main dwelling, so.
Yeah.
Are we talking the same one here? 1643 I've got is the one on Center Road, Slump. Old hut.
Oh, okay.
So.
Let me check it. I don't know, it should be on the list anyway, right? But unless it got repealed.
I think they were down at Tate's down in Hurtville. They had certain limitations and now they're C2. Now, as I said, maybe they're one and the same. I don't know what they could do there with the special provision and what C2 allows, but just to cross reference.
Yeah, I can check that too.
And 1611, that's Minerva Park. There were certain things allowed under the special provision, and then it went C2 as well. There was concern that there were more possible uses with the C2. It was interesting with that one because under the special provisions, a marina was allowed. The C2 wouldn't allow it. So it's a question, I guess, whether you want special provisions and a marina going up there or a C2 which wouldn't allow a marina.
I'm assuming that you want to keep the marina as a part of that zone.
Well, it was hard to understand the appeal on that one because it just said the C2 expanded the uses, I think, to that effect. And the person didn't say we wanted to go back to special provision. But if you look at what special provisions allows, marina is one of the lists. And I don't know whether council wants. It was entertained as a possible option there years back. There was an environmental economic development committee established, and that was one of the things they looked at. But it didn't go any further because there was opposition to it at the time. So.
But still plausible, I suppose.
Yes, considering the area, yes.
I think the public would like to see it zoned open space, like just park, or not that?
Some maybe, yeah. I mean, it started out as cabins, I guess, and then they had re hill there too, a little, they were selling some food out of one booth, and that changed hands over the years. But I know that's what we sort of started to, the whole process in the 90s. And so we looked at what uses historically have been there. And I think that's where we come up with the special provision. Since you could do all this, not, there wasn't a marina as such. Although, shouldn't say that, because there was one person who actually took in some boats there. There was an old boathouse facing the village. And Beamish, I think his name was. And I'm not sure about fuel, to be honest, whether that was ever used there or not. But it's just something we have to look at.
But I guess, in the spirit of leaving sort of things the way they were, mm-hmm. we should put it back to an exception.
I would think an exception would make sense. An exception, it covers a lot of possible uses there. So. Another one was 1619. That curial, it had specific uses, and then it's gone to a C2. Many ages since I've been in there, so I don't know what it's, how it's being used now. It's a children's camp, but what they have.
It's a going concern. I've been in there.
Yeah. So it may be one of the same. It may be what they could do as an exception then, and maybe what C2 allows. Maybe. And 1636, same sort of situation. I think that was Camp Kodiak, which is one of the same, wasn't it? Curio Kodiak?
Yes.
It's now gone to a C2. I know it's just a chart, but I guess it's for 1617 on the right hand side. I noticed there were, it says EP, and I wondered if that was a C23 instead of EP. Just trying to cross reference. If you look up 1617, and it says now C23, and yet on the chart it says EP. Now I know the chart's not going in the book, so, or maybe it is. I don't know how.
No, it was more for discussion.
Yeah. To M1 industrial. You've added a couple in there. That's fairly standard, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Whether they ever become real or not.
And the chart's basically the same?
Yep.
Industrial pit zone. Chart the same.
Correct.
Now the landfill zone. I just questioned that, I guess, in what I'd sent to you. It's really not a landfill anymore, but you do have uses, transfer stations, so I guess that covers it. You wouldn't have a special zone, just transfer station as opposed to landfill. Is it misleading to think that we can still deposit things there?
Could it ever be mined?
Talk to MOE, I Right now it's transfer station, but I don't see the member letting us go back to a landfill, so.
Is there a likelihood there ever would be a landfill in McKellar? They're pretty hard to establish.
I can see why you would leave it in there. It makes sense. And then
well, it's in there because if a former landfill site exists,
right,
certain MOE criteria kicks in terms of doing hydrogeological examinations.
Okay.
So, I mean, some municipalities like Seguin has 5 transfer stations, and you don't want that to trigger any hydro G, so they have 2 different categories.
Okay. We still have studies done on the old landfill site.
Oh, you still have to monitor.
Monitor, yes.
I'm just wondering, a future use may be like piling of leaves, or if the township was doing road work and had to get rid of excess, say, ditch material, something, there's a possibility we may want to do some landfilling, as it's certainly not garbage, but clean fill. Is that permitted in any case?
The MOE, I guess. That's what I have to do.
Yeah, then it sounds fairly benign to me to throw in clean fill.
That's what it would be, ditching material. You know, if we're doing road work, which we will be, and if they want to get rid of some extra, yes, as long as they're allowed to take it in there and get rid of it.
I can't see how that would aggravate the old.
No, I wouldn't think so, but as long as it's permitted.
Well, the thing that we were concerned about, I guess, we have the MOE certificate of approval for the certain area. We got the footprint expanded, so the way we could do the transfer station. And that was a struggle. And then we bought the 30 acres adjacent to it, but we can't seem to do much with that property, similar to what Councillor Haskins is referencing. We have all that space. It's sort of an attenuation zone now. It's not being used for anything, but that would be a good space to sort of expand. It wouldn't be transfer as such. It would be more landfill. But I just don't know whether we should even open that up.
No, probably not, but the general rule is unless you're proposing a sensitive use,
right.
So if you use it industrially, you're fine, because there's nobody living, habitating, or consuming anything off the ground, so you should be fine.
Even if it's that close to the transfer station?
I believe so. I mean, it might be worthwhile to get your operations guy to check that account, but I understand the record of site condition, or only it only gets triggered if you're proposing sensitive uses, residential, institutional, that kind of thing.
I see in our mapping it is including the additional property that was purchased. It's all mapped out as the M3.
Okay.
So we're already
that
there.
That's good. We're already there. I know the struggle we had with the footprint getting it enlarged. Now we've really enlarged it. It shows up in the map. Yeah,
yeah, I guess some discussions prior, we decided to go on 3 with the whole parcel, which I think is good planning going forward, because there's a lot of property there, and that's where I'm saying that, yeah, if we need clean fill, a location kind of thing, and it's certainly no residential use anywhere around there whatsoever, so I would think it's good to be all zoned the M3, so well, John thinks that's...
Yeah, I think that works. It's surrounded by Crown land as well.
Yeah. Well, I guess the M3 would also have setbacks also, right?
Yes.
Or is that what you're interpreting, looking at this map with that small little box there, that's the 30 acres down the road too? Like, how can you confirm that?
Because I know the additional section goes back to that FP zone. So the whole lot, I believe what we originally was just zoned for... landfill was a very, very small little parcel. it was only, I don't even know if it was 5 acres, 2 or 5 acres, the original. So this is obviously up to the size of, yeah, it looks like 30 acres. What's shaded in there in the yellow line?
Well, if you look at the scale on that map.
That's meters.
Meters. So it looks like the width of that yellow box is about 250 meters.
Yeah, thereabouts. Yeah. So 250 meters by, say, 300 meters. Are you good at math that way, John? Or?
Yeah. So that would be.
So that would be the
7.75 hectares.
So that would be the footprint of the old site and the current transfer station. It doesn't look like that's including the. Because that the footprint of the old site went down to the creek.
Yeah, this floodplain is another way up the hill beyond the creek and down another far hill, way over. You don't see that area at all. It doesn't show that little, which is almost a non-creek, really. It just dries up in the summertime. It's not indicated on there because it's so small. And it would run about through the M3 logo there, that little valley.
Yeah, if that's the extent of the road into where it crosses there, yeah, I tend to agree with you that it includes that.
But I guess John can just double check that in your map.
Are we talking about the parcel under the word Lees Road?
That's right, that yellow M3.
Yeah, so how big is that, is the question?
Yeah,
we're
thinking it's supposed to be around 30 acres. You think
well, there's 30 in addition to the transfer station.
Yeah,
yes.
So would that calculate? It looks like it to me, because when you look at a 100 acre lot, it's a fair chunk. So I like the mapping. I think the mapping is right.
So it'd be something to investigate. That sounds really good.
Yeah, and to allow the landfilling of clean materials.
Well, that would be another certificate of approval.
Yeah.
Whatever zoning is doesn't mean that we've had the approval of the Minister of the Environment.
Yeah, that's right. But at least we have the proper zoning in place. If we decide to go with the application, which I think we should be looking at something with the construction of Center Road in the next year to 2-3 years.
So a waste disposal zone then? Sewage stabilization pond?
Stabilization works like there's a spray irrigation area.
There is, there, you're right.
On the south side.
South side,
of Camp Road.
Yeah. But the actual equipment is on the other side, isn't it? When you drive in on the right, on the inner road?
Yeah. The little
white
things.
So I'm not sure.
So how do they. They still use the south side of the road to spread a lot of the wastewater in the woods. So it's got a license as well.
Yeah.
We'll find out the extent of that. Because it's got a waste disposal site zoning for it and the lagoons.
Right.
And the buffer areas around that are EP.
zoned? Or open space, I guess, if you're looking at the first, everything stays the same in the table.
Right.
I noticed that one, maybe you have some history on this one, you have open space up in Gray Owl, this is on the mapping. There is a boat launch there, but I don't think it's a township boat launch. I'm not sure who owns it, but people use it, but I just.
I think Dan Mallory owns it.
Yeah.
And we tried to negotiate it from him, but he was fairly, how should I say, non-negotiating.
But it's still open space.
It is open space, and I don't think he has a problem with the zone, and I don't think he has a problem with the public using it, per se.
Okay.
But I, and anyway, it'll, no harm, no foul, just, like, the public do use it.
Yeah.
If I understand correctly.
By the time you take the 33 feet from the center line out, you're almost kind of almost covering that property too.
Well, I'm not sure about the 33 feet either.
Well, yeah.
All the way in Gray Owl, there was always a controversy. Did you own the 66 feet? There were fences very close on either side, like West Road.
Well, I think it's a trespass road.
Yeah.
So Mallory still owns the title to the road. But the municipality has the right of trespass in terms of maintenance,
right,
to the ditches.
Oh yeah, okay.
Spaces in the village here. Show us the one at the government dock, we always call it down Lakeshore. Does it show, David, it's not looking for it now, the boat launch area on Lakeshore?
No.
It's on the map.
I mean, it's on the map, but it's not zoned open space.
Boat launch?
On Lakeshore.
Right.
Is that open space?
Well, I don't know what else you would call it.
Yeah, I think I'd call it a park. But it's not zoned that way. It looks like it's just a heavy line. But I think a little box in there with an OS to it makes sense.
Yeah, I would think so. As well, indicate it somehow.
But the other one is on Lakeside Drive, right? There's no open space where the boat launch is.
No, sheet 1A, you could easily show it on there pretty easily.
Yeah.
Because that other map is pretty small to
it's
try to
put. It's pretty tiny, but on the blow up, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
I think the one on the lakeside that you're referencing is the big field area. It's open space, but not the boat launch.
No, I think the
boat launch, I think, is still probably just waterfront.
Well, the township.
John, the field on Lakeside. That's
open.
The open space, or where the boat launch is.
Yeah, we're on Lakeshore here for a second. Okay, we.
So you're moving over to.
Sorry.
Lakeside.
Which is.
Lakeside Drive. Back in there, there's a boat ramp, and then yes, the township does own that field.
Mm-hmm.
This is on. Is it Robinson?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah, it's owned open space.
Yeah, the actual big field is, but she was asking about the boat launch.
Oh.
I think it's still waterfront, probably.
Oh, it is. Should it be open space? I'm assuming you want to treat them consistently, right?
Well, I guess it's always a question whether it is a conveyable lot as opposed to open space. But
which one, the field or the launch?
The launch.
it hung up if you sold it?
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't, that just won't happen.
No.
So it could just go to open space, and that confirms it for everybody in there. Future councils couldn't say, well, heck with all you. Well, I guess the township could go for a rezoning. And no appealing allowed anymore, so I guess you just get to do what you want.
Well, the tendency for government positions tends to be like a pendulum. So just wait till we get tired of the present government. And you may find that that radical change is going to get changed again.
Yeah, you're right.
On to EP zone.
Questions on floodplain. Page 69, floodplain, John. Is all what you put in red coming back out again?
It must have been blank before. Maybe he's put that in since. And I don't know whether those are white stones.
Probably did come from white stones. And what do you think of it?
Oh, well, floodplain, would you like allow residential uses?
Only if they're engineered.
Okay. Okay, that's it. Sounds fair. Okay. So a lot of frontages and a lot of areas that are very minimal.
Right. The presumption is nothing is going to get built there. That's the presumption. But the floodplains were provided by MNRF as mostly kind of the banks of rivers, creeks.
Mm-hmm. Well, we do have a big chunk of floodplain in Herdville, I believe. And I'm just concerned that they could possibly allow very, very, the smallest lots we're allowing at all in that area is almost what I kind of read it as.
Well, if that's the provincially significant wetland, that's already marked out, I think. MNR told us it had to be. Is that what you're thinking of in Herdville?
Yeah, but I thought it was there was a large floodplain area in Herdville. But let's just have a look on our mapping.
I think John had marked PSW on there.
Yes.
Oh, I am wrong. It's all waterfront, too. Okay. So
there are large areas of floodplain along the river as well.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I was thinking that it was quite a bit more extensive than what is on the mapping. So, okay, that's fine. Well, I think that just seemed to get my attention anyway, the very small numbers for lot frontage and area.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the reason for that is that there are four things like floodway works and dams and control measures rather than residential construction.
Now, the one here I wasn't sure just omitted the crown land, whether that should be another zone?
Oh, I mean, it's shown.
It's shown, yeah.
And we just identify it.
I know we don't have much say in it, but.
No, and what happens is you get to say something about it if it becomes private property through
right.
some kind of disposition or transfer. Then your bylaw kicks in. But if you go back to the interpretation section, it kind of describes how crown land works.
Well, you have in here the permitted uses. I just think that maybe the title was omitted in our document, page 70.
Oh, yeah, so we'll make sure the crown land is put back in the title. general rule is they don't alienate land for residential purposes, but they will for commercial. So if you propose a lodge on a chunk of crown land, you do the necessary due diligence, the king will sell you that. But it doesn't happen fast. But for a cottage, you can't get crown land unless you're north of the French River.
We just had a situation back in Brownlee Road where people were, I guess, applying to Ministry of Natural Resources, and the township was asked to comment, actually to see that it fit into our land policy. It's a piece of crown land that was going to a private property owner.
But it must have been like a sliver or something. Like a
well, we thought it was a sliver, and then Councillor Haskell looked at it and thought it was a pretty big sliver, maybe.
Was it like a crown reservation along the shore?
I don't know.
No, it was a chunk, I think. I believe was on Mary Jane. Right?
Wasn't there a building?
So it has to be an encroachment. Yeah,
yeah.
They will fix an encroachment.
Yeah, that's what it was. There was buildings encroaching onto that crown land off the private land. So I guess they went to the crown, and the crown agreed to sell them a portion.
But I couldn't go and buy 2 acres of crown land for a dwelling. That wouldn't be allowed.
Right.
They will fix an encroachment for
right.
residential, but that's
yeah,
it.
That's what it was. Yeah.
I noticed on the mapping as well, we've still got pretty well all the firebirds, and I'm not sure where we're at. The previous council started to change the names, actual names, rather than firebird. I'm not sure what we should do with the mapping.
I'd like to be as accurate as I could. Now, is it something that someone can provide?
I'll give you a list.
Yeah,
okay.
I'd like that to be accurate.
Okay. And there was one reference that came up before, I think it's still on here in the first sheet. Squaw Lake Road should be now Swan Boulevard.
Oh.
Up at the top right.
It's Swan Boulevard?
Apparently, that was one of the original names of the developer, I guess. They were given options to people in there, two or three names, and that's what they came up with.
They couldn't have Squaw Lake Road.
Yeah, about 25 years ago, the geographic name for it changed all references to Squaw in the whole province.
I wondered as well on the mapping, down in Rainsway, I guess. Just trying to see which map that is.
Rainsway is on sheet 3, I think.
Yeah.
Wondered that whole middle section there, and I know it touches water down below, but should that be an open space like Camp Manitowoc or not Tate's Island?
Is it owned jointly or does someone own it?
Jointly.
So it functions the same way as the center of Tate's Island?
I'm not sure what agreement they have, but I'm just wondering if the whole thing being WF2.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a misdirection, I think. Yeah, let me look at the ownership. Like, people are happy at Tate's Island with the center being open space. They seem to be.
Seem to be.
I don't know if we have one of the owners in the room.
Oh. We can find out later.
She got her hand up if she has an opinion.
Well, we'll get to the public as they say.
Okay.
I want to make sure we cover everything here. You can make a note and get back to us here.
Yes, right on for the map sheet one. Yeah, because we still have the fire route. There instead of Stony Road. So that'll get changed when all the higher roads do. Old community center ground. I had a question mark there because with our new additional property there. I don't think it's included. No, in the blown up section, sheet 1A, the community center, John?
Next door?
Yeah, next door, we bought a portion there to the south, the other side of the arena over here. So whether you want to get a copy of the survey from Carly or something, you can add that to the, I guess, to the C1.2, I guess.
Right. It's a ball field. Or going to be a ball field?
Going to be a ball field and parking area.
I'm just wondering, too, with all of this mapping and that, and you mentioned this is your legacy sort of thing, you're going out with this one. What happens to this as far as... like you're making the changes now. I guess the bottom line is, what's it going to cost us to have access to this information?
Oh, we can just give you all the data. I mean, many municipalities still have Patrick update their bylaws every two or three years.
Okay.
And so he has it all on a hard drive. But if you want a copy of it.
I don't know, I'll have to ask her what the plan is.
I was going to ask you, John, can it be compatible with like West Graceland Geographical Network so we could put a layer on there?
Oh, that's what it is.
Okay,
it
perfect.
Is a layer,
yeah.
Yeah, so Patrick works with West Graceland Geographic Network and they share files.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
I mean, some municipalities may have the talent to update on their own. I don't know if McKellar does have a GIS person. No. Okay. And it's not a big item. I think it's, you know, a small amount every 3 years to have your bylaws current and then repost them as consolidated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it'd be good. It makes it difficult, certainly, when you get something this small to...
Yeah, being able to blow it up is greatly... I think improving upon the product.
Anything else generally from council? Now, if we haven't covered some of the, I know you had some topics at the start there. If you think there are some generalizations, some philosophy, principles, you've got notes on revisions.
Yes.
Is there anything we should be covering there? I know some of them dealt with some appeals.
I think we kind of brushed on them.
Right.
But. And there is a copy of the sample waterfront study from a recent review of Lorimer Lake.
Yeah, that got quite technical, yes.
It tends to be, but the important part of it was related to the trophic animal that's out there. And it was written by that fellow whose name I gave you, Jay?
Yes,
yeah.
David Leader,
yeah.
No, I saw that. Although he referred, well, yeah, he referred us to another person. That,
oh, did he?
Yes.
From the same company?
Yes. Do you remember the name, Jonathan?
Patrick?
Brent Parsons.
Brent Parsons, that's right.
Parsons, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Brent's worked in McKellar.
Yeah.
I just wonder with that particular one, because I noticed that I went through it. He makes quite a few references to the Lake Capacity Assessment Handbook, and then he said they went beyond as far as distance away, and he did talk about the, I think as you told us before, 97% doesn't go beyond 10 meters of the septic, as far
right.
as the phosphorus. But he does reference, they did tests on this particular piece of property in Lorimer, they went back even further than what the Lake Capacity Handbook said, and that's how they did the studies. But I guess what I'm getting to is that is it something we want to, you have a lot of it just crossed out, is it something we want to cross out, or is it something we want to keep in and look at other measures as well? Like somebody had suggested larger lot sizes perhaps in on particular lakes to mitigate any phosphorus loading, but is it something we want to actually get rid of? Because even as I read Hutchinson and the Muskoka Lakes one in particular, they've kept it in as different options available to you. They talk about so many meters back from the waterfront, and then they talk about if you can't meet that, then there's another thing you can do with a closer, like instead of the 30 meters down to 20 meters, and you can do mitigation through this method. So can we look at it as a tiered sort of thing rather than just eliminating it altogether?
Yeah, I think I said the last time that the data is good. The object really is to understand that the hypothesis was not accurate initially, but it's good to know what your lakes are in terms of where they are from a chemical point of view. But the object really is to not add any phosphorus to a water body. And you can do that as that is described in a number of ways, talking about distances, talking about the kind of system, and where you locate the system. So it's good data. I would never say we should just eliminate it, so I'm going to leave the data in and put the definitions back in, but
okay.
The object will be to not allow any more fertilizer, essentially, into the lake. And new systems tend to be designed that's what happens. That it doesn't get there. It's ironic and perhaps somewhat counterintuitive, but it's the old cottagers that were developed right up until about the 70s or 80s. Those are the ones that are problematic because their systems aren't really up to snuff.
Mm-hmm.
But new systems, they should be phosphorus free in terms of migrating to the lake.
So you want to leave it in?
I'm going to put it in and have that qualification.
Right,
in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just a question.
Yeah.
On John, on that lakeshore capacity handbook, did you say, I might be wrong, but that it's redundant now?
It's a tool, but it's because it's now outdated, it has limitations.
Okay.
So, but, you know, it's a tool. You've got a 1955 pickup truck. You probably wouldn't drive it to the airport, but you could drive it around the farm. So it's just old technology now. They won't throw it out. The province won't throw it out, but it, the province doesn't like moving on anything.
Right, but it's not something that has to be followed to the
no.
T. Okay.
No, that's not the right science anymore.
Okay.
Since we're referencing a bit of the OP, I noticed that quite a few changes that we talked about before. That was good you incorporated. But I noticed the third clause was left out again in about who pays for what. I guess it's now 5.9.2.11. I think it was probably just inadvertent that it was.
Yeah, I think it was. So if I miss it again, I miss it twice. So
yeah.
You know.
At this point, round two. So I want to shortly open it up to the public as well for things that
I'm
may have discussed it, but go ahead.
I just have a question. I don't know if it's appropriate for here for now, but it's to deal with the official plan and the zoning bylaw and the motion that we had passed as council. If you recall, it was 24204. It was saying the Council of Corporation of Township of McKellar does hereby request that all correspondence concerning the official plan and required zoning bylaw received by any council member and staff must be shared immediately with all members of council and staff. Well, I have emails that were sent to certain council members and weren't shared with staff. We didn't receive them until further emails, but the original ones were not shared with staff, and I think that we should be following this motion.
I would tend to agree. I don't know who's involved, but
well, I can say who's involved
that
if
was
that's appropriate.
That was certainly agreed to, and so that we could all be at the same level, we all know what's going on.
Yes. Yeah. So I just want to remind us that this is a motion that was put forward, and we should all be on the same level playing field, right?
Okay. Have to think back a bit.
No, it wasn't you, Marla.
No. And most taxpayers don't talk to me anymore.
That's all, thanks.
Okay, so I'll just open this period of time here to the public. Any other questions? And whether the council can answer at this point, or whether John, you're sticking around for a little bit.
Certainly.
Okay. Speak through the microphone, yes, for those in person, and on Zoom, we'll just we'll let the in-person go first, I guess. If you have any particular comments, we just need your name.
Roy Zulak. I just have a question. What is the distance from the water body that you get the water from land, John?
Well, I believe at one time there's so many meters that we considered waterfront, and then from there would become rural. Is that correct?
Well, there's a policy in the municipality's official plan that sort of sets out a generalized 150 meters or 500 feet, but it says that can move more or less if it's functionally more or less. So it has a number parameter and it has an intent. That is, if a property is oriented towards the water, even if it might be 300 meters deep, all 300 meters could be considered waterfront. And similarly, if it was only 60 meters, could be less of a distance. So functionally and purposely, 150 meters.
Get that work.
Okay, that's good. One other question. On the open spaces, the property on the open spaces, I thought there was no ownership. For open spaces to exist, there could be no title. Am I wrong?
If a property owner or owners are happy with the zoning of open space, then there's not a problem having it in private hands. If a property owner does not want open space, that should be respected and it should be put in a zone that wouldn't necessarily reflect an expectation that the public has access to it. So your question is generally correct. You should not take away private property rights through zoning unless those property owners are in fact supportive of that restrictive zoning, such as the center of Tate's Island.
That's good. Thank you.
Can I just ask John a question about that then? So, open space, let's say, like, are you saying that that piece of property on Tate's Island is zoned open space?
It is.
So, anybody from the public can go there?
No.
Okay.
No, no.
Okay,
it's,
that's what
it's not that
okay.
Free, but you as a municipality cannot restrict a property from no use at all intentionally, but because it's their property and that's the way they wish it to be zoned, that's fine.
Okay.
So the law has established a principle that if you zone a property in an open space zone because you don't want them to use it, then you have to appropriate it. You have to acquire it. You can't expropriate through zoning.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Gant Fuller. I came to make some comments on the trophic level that were mentioned in the last meeting, but just before I start, there was a question about the ownership of the property along Rhine's Way. So that's owned by the Longhorn Conservation Association. Almost everybody, there's one or two exceptions that along Rhine's Way and Lizzie's Lane, own that in common. It's tied into our deeds, so when we sell the property, the right to the park ownership of the Conservation Association passes along to the next owner. And the other thing is that for taxation purposes, it's designated managed forest. And so that's how the authority, the Conservation Association is taxed. It's managed forest. And we maintain trails in there and maintain bridges over streams and that kind of thing. And the insurance company checks out the how good the bridges and the trails are and that kind of thing. So we have somebody go in and do maintenance, and we do maintenance ourselves as well. I don't know if there are any other questions.
Well, no, I just don't know what John would label that then.
Well, that would be my question through the chair. Would the group owners in there want it zoned open space or just left the way it is?
Which is Waterfront 2 right now.
Correct.
Yeah.
It sounds like it wouldn't matter, but it's their call.
Yeah.
It would almost fall into that category of that 150 meters you're talking about also, because it's all, it's...
Touches the lake.
It does touch the lake, yeah, but it's... like you said, it's up to the property owners.
So Doug, where's the president? You don't just ask him. It's great. Anyway, in my capacity as two volunteer positions, and so I'll just introduce myself to Mr. Jackson. I'm the lake steward for MLCA, and I also chair the Lake Stewardship and Environmental Committee. That's one of the township volunteer committees. So Councillor Ryland contacted me after the initial official plan meeting, I think it was June 25th, and asked if I would look into the issue of trophic levels. And so Mr. Jackson's suggestion was to call David Leader, and Councillor Ryland received a message back from Brent Parsons from Hutchison Environmental, and Councillor Ryland asked me to follow through on it. So my question to Dr. Parsons was to clarify whether, in fact, phosphorus from septic systems does not migrate to surface waters to contribute to additional nutrient loading. And his response was 90% of the septic phosphorus is attenuated in the soil with the new septic systems. And so it's that 10% that's still there. The lake capacity model, though, he told me, it has been found to be inadequate in terms of predicting blooms of blue-green algae, because there have been blooms currently happening in many lakes that are oligotrophic, which means the phosphorus count is 10 micrograms per liter or less. And so obviously that's not the only thing that matters. So having a reasonable phosphorus level in the lake is not a safeguard against blue-green algae bloom. The lake capacity model, and it was basically taken as the only thing that matters is eutrophic level, and that's obviously not true, because they're getting blue-green algae blooms in lakes that have a low phosphorus level. There's much more to consider for lake capacity. And that the current thinking is that lake management needs to take place on a more holistic level. And I think Mr. Jackson mentioned that the best management practices are changing And this means replicating natural systems of lake restoration and renewal. There is still somewhat of a phosphorus load from septics, although that's, as I said, estimated to be 10%. Of course, we have a lot of septics that are older and will have a higher runoff rate. Increasing density around the lake means that natural vegetation is impacted and it becomes more difficult to retain the buffer. And vegetation that exists in a natural system, shoreline vegetation, slows the storm runoff that would take sediment into the lake. For instance, the increasing runoff of road salt into the lakes impacts the zooplankton that eat algae. And so the zooplankton then are less available to control the level of algae in the lake. So climate change may be increasing storm runoff and also increasing the water temperatures, which an increasing water temperature also promotes algae growth. Increasing temperatures affects the viability of lake trout because they require cold, deeper lakes, and they also require oxygen to be above, I think it's 7%, at the very bottom of the lake. And so I don't know if you're familiar with the data that the MLCA has been putting up online. It's on the McKellar Township website. We do have a couple of areas that occasionally go down to 0% oxygen at the very bottom, but that's just a by-the-by. And of course, a higher water temperature also promotes increased algae growth. Dr. Parsons said that he's recently completed a report for Muskoka Township which outlines such a holistic approach that replicates natural systems. It's not yet publicly available, believe me, I asked for it. But anyway, he said it's important to be honest about other impacts on the lake health, and take appropriate measures and enforce them. He also mentioned that. So residents with lakefront properties need to come to terms with their responsibility for lake stewardship and its attendant costs. Dr. Parsons is currently in discussions with both McDougall and Whitestone townships concerning the possibility of the development of a lake management plan to keep their lakes resilient. And it's possible that McKellar Township may be able to participate in that effort if that goes forward. So even though we don't have trout lakes in McKellar Township, the impact of an increase in blue-green algae blooms would have an enormous impact on the health of the lake, the economy of the township, the property values, and the tourist industry in terms of the recreational value of our lakes. And I know that the fact that we do the testing in McKellar Township, that's attractive to people. I know of two people who, when they were researching where to buy a cottage, looked at McKellar Township, saw that we test the water, and said, I'm going there, you know, and that's really the reason that that was the deciding factor for them. And so I would encourage council to leave the trophic level in, but it's not sufficient anymore. We need to go past that to best management practices and look at, you know, the vegetation that's required. I think the guideline in Muskoka, I'm just trying to recall here, but I'm pretty sure it was 75% of the property, other than the dwelling, should be more heavily vegetated, i.e. bushes and trees with longer roots than grass. And same with the shoreline. So 75% of the shoreline should be vegetated, and 25% is for the enjoyment of the property owner. And development is going to happen. We need everybody, we need a place to live, and we need places to work. And so I think that the forward thinking, if you, we have the indigenous people in our area who plan forward seven generations. So I think doing that, enforcing or having guidelines for vegetative growth on the, especially the waterfront properties in McKellar Township would be a wise thing. I don't know if anybody has any questions.
Well, that sounds good. I mean, we get to an actual formal document, we can, you'll have a chance to look at that too with a public meeting, et cetera, and then see if what you're suggesting has been incorporated or what we can do maybe to increase I get the wording in such a way that some of your concerns are being taken care of, yes. I think one thing that I noticed has been done here, it's been increased the setbacks, I guess, from water frontage from 10 meters to 15 meters you put in.
That was in one of the recommendations.
One recommendation, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's another area we'll have to certainly look at. And I don't know whether you did talk about the vegetated buffer, I think, along the shoreline.
Yeah, I think I agree with everything that's been said here from this standpoint, but we need to sort of rework our policy to reflect what she's saying, because what she's saying is, I think, entirely correct. It's just not any longer about the phosphorus, because it just doesn't migrate to the extent it was forecasted to. And blue-green algae is just awful. I agree with that. I mean, we've had it on Georgian Bay in a few instances, which is terrifying. Where does it come from? It's just a freak of whatever is happening out there. So, you know, we do whatever we can to keep our lakes healthy.
Certainly the runoff does affect what happens in the lake. I think you're all familiar, hopefully, with the numbers that we got from the E. coli sampling that happened about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, where Moffett Lake had three different sites that were all in the 700 range, where 200 used to pose the beaches, and Stewart Park Beach hit 500. And now Moffett Lake has come down. They were able to resample and it hit around 120, 140 in the same three sites. But that's certainly ample evidence that storm rainwater does affect the lake. So.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. I just want to
I'll go to the Zoom shortly.
Oh, yeah, okay. Am I allowed to ask?
Well, yes, through the microphone, though.
Okay.
The chair.
Does Mammoth Warming Lake have any blue algae in it? That's where the algae blooms in Mammoth Warming Lake.
There weren't any last year. I believe it was 2020 that we had a blue green algae bloom, just a small one, in Jones Bay. And so when the samplers for the E. coli samples go out, they're asked to keep their eyes open to see if there's any blue-green algae, and that's the way we sort of cover the lake. And I know that they're quite aware of watching for that. And actually, there was a bloom up in south of McKellar Bay, in between there and the McKellar Narrows, but that was found not to be blue-green algae. So there was algae, but it was a different type. So that was a relief. That was last year.
What's the phosphorus level in Mammoth Warming Lake?
Well, it's, I can go get my phone and look at all the numbers if you like, but the phosphorus levels, for the most part, it's mesotrophic. For the most part, it's mesotrophic. So that means between 20 and 30. Most of them, some of them are, that's eutrophic. So
that's
between 10 and 20.
10
most
five.
Of them are, some of them are just over 20. But we test probably 8 different areas in Manitowabin, and we also test 5 other lakes. So forgive me if I don't know all the numbers off by heart.
So,
okay, Gord. Make your point, Gord, and then...
A lake, excuse me. So, yeah, a lot of you bloom a lake that's got low phosphorus. And there's lakes that have high phosphorus and have absolutely no algae in them at all. How could that be?
I'll just...
Yeah, quickly.
As I was saying, it's phosphorus isn't the only thing that matters. That's
oh,
where the
oh,
science
no,
is.
I'm just saying that that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
Thank you.
Okay.
Great, thank you. Okay, people on Zoom, thank you for waiting. We need your name, though, before you make a comment. Thank you. You can handle it currently?
Yep.
Okay. you have any questions for our planner, John Jackson?
Chris, you can go ahead. You'll just have to unmute.
Sorry about that. Hi, my name is Chris Hapke. I just have a question about ancillary buildings like sheds. So recently the Ontario Building Code, they opted to, I think, 160 square feet to be built without a permit, and I think McKellar is still at 108 square feet. Do we have any plan to bring it up in line with Ontario Building Codes?
Yeah, that's a good point. The reasoning for the 108 was to trigger the need for a permit, so there was some knowledge and control of where they were placed. And now that the building code's gone to 15 square meters, which translate into 160 square feet, we should get in step with that. So that's a good point. Thank you.
Awesome. And may I ask another question?
Go ahead, yes.
Just referring back to the original Airbnb discussion, I don't have a horse in the race. I don't rent up a cottage. But when it comes to thinking about, you know, licensing versus rezoning as a commercial, et cetera, have we looked at any other municipalities or states or provincial levels on as to what they're doing? Because we're definitely not the first to have to address this.
I previously have had about a dozen municipal clients, and the topic, obviously, because we're in cottage country, has come forward in all of my experiences. So there was a mixed bag of responses based on how various councils felt, from we don't want to touch it, to we don't want the extra administration, to let's do a licensing bylaw. So I bring to the table a fair bit of experience, but again, it's going to come down to how the community, through its council, wants its direction on the issue to go. I did a conference in Huntsville for the Muskokas, and at the end of the day, they started out somewhat upset, but at the end they were happy if the municipalities over there would go by way of licensing as well. And I have lots of colleagues where the birthplace of the issue occurred, which was the town of the Blue Mountains. On the Tuesday of a long weekend, it was World War III. It was mostly to do with the skiing chalets, and the kids that they pumped into a three-bedroom chalet was insane. So they had to do something, and they brought the matter to court. So they ended up with not only an official plan amendment, a zoning bylaw amendment, and a licensing agreement, spurred on by Interwest, who had, you know, a major player in the rental game over in the Collingwood area. So you can pick a lane and decide how you want to proceed, and that's what is going to come out of this, probably based on a lot of community requests, I would suspect.
Okay, is that an answer?
Yeah, I was just wondering what all municipalities were just drawing our experience from. But yeah, appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nancy, go ahead next.
Hi, it's Nancy Mallory calling in, and I wanted to find out a little bit more about the open space at the Grey Owl Bridge. I'm kind of confused as to what constitutes the open space. It was a little bit confusing with the conversation about it can be private land and it can be zoned as long as the private landowner agrees with. So I don't really understand the designation of open space in that particular location near that boat launch that's been referenced.
Okay, John?
I do know a little bit about it, mostly because when I was working with the planning board, there were applications for consent on associated lands. And I'm not sure if it was this council or the previous council, but
previous.
The owner of the land wanted it left private. They did not concern themselves about the public using it, And I believe it's the only access to the water in terms of a little ramp. Because that was the general understanding or history of how that property evolved, the council at the time did not want to strong arm. The owner was quite willing to leave it as a public access, but in private ownership. So that's how that unfolded, and council agreed to that soft negotiation. So it was just the history of how it was used and who used it, and they left it that way. It's a bit of an oddity, but that's how it evolved.
The actual zoning then, I guess the question whether it should be open space or waterfront?
Well, I believe that the owner didn't have a concern how it was zoned, just that he didn't want to convey it to the municipality. That was his preference, just to keep it private.
Does that answer your questions or help? Or?
She's muted right.
Sorry,
now.
Nancy, I muted you.
Yeah. Oh, did you mute her or her puppy? Let me put it this way, Your Worship. I would prefer it be in public hands, but I didn't have any control over that.
All right.
What are the implications of it remaining in the open space? I think that in some ways is confusing for the public that it's, I think on the plan it says open spaces slash park. So it's not clear to anybody that looks at that designation.
Through you, Your Worship, that is a good comment because it really isn't clear. In a way, a private property owner can do whatever it chooses in terms of private property. So it's a bit precarious in that regard, but I think Councillor Haskin mentioned that most of that portion of the ramp is actually almost part of the road for the most part. So maybe it'll eventually end up in the public's domain, but right now it's not.
Yeah, right now it's not. And it's not part of the private lot that has the cottage on it that's neighboring it. It's really the zoning that's considered part of that boat launch area.
I believe that's accurate as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I guess it's not clear to me at this point. There's a sign there that says for Gray Owl Lake users, it's not really considered, open access for anybody that wanted to fish in Lorimer Lake. And Lorimer is known to have very restricted boat launching access. So it isn't really intended for it's certainly posted as available for residents and cottage users of Gray Owl Lake area. So I just think that's not clear. It's considered not really openly public. I wouldn't want it sort of posted that it was openly public. And maybe that's the open space that gets confusing. Anyway, it may be something that I just need to understand better, what the implications are for it.
Okay, no, we hear you. I'm just not sure if John has an answer to all of this.
Yeah.
If it's private property, I mean, certainly concerns there, reliability and any number of things. And if it's not public property, then public shouldn't be using it. But we have to clarify that if the private owner is letting the public use it and putting up signs saying which public can use it, I guess it's up to the private landowner to do the surveillance and see what's going on. I mean, the township can't enforce any bylaws on that piece of property.
Right. So I guess, is there a reason to have it continue to be designated as open space?
Well, you recall my comments, if the owner doesn't want it open space, we can remove it and should remove it.
Okay, and that would be just to contact you, John, or how does that
well,
go about doing that if that was the case?
I knew that Dan was involved with the property. Are you involved with it as well?
Yeah, I am.
Can you speak for the owner?
Well, no, I think we would have a conversation. I'm really just...
So my position would be that...
Just really trying to get me...
Yeah, my position would be, as I explained, I explained to council, if a private property owner does not want their land zoned open space, I would take it off. Mm-hmm. So I'm prepared to recommend that.
Okay, and if that was the case, then we would contact the council or you, John, or can I follow up with that in some way?
It's done. We're all here.
Yeah, she'll get back to us.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
Oh, you're not certain, Nancy, of whether that's the direction you want.
Well, I'm just not feel like I should speak for other parties without a conversation.
Okay, that's fine. I made a note. You get back to me. You know where to find me, and the principle I will trigger. If you don't want an OS, it won't be OS.
Okay. Okay, wonderful. At least I can think about it and know how to, and it, sorry, the sound for the council meeting has been very hard to track, so I didn't quite catch who was contacted. Is it you, John?
Sure, that works. Yes.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next speaker on Zoom. Hands up or
no hands yet if you want to.
Yes, hello, it's Fred Pierce. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Frank Peters.
Damn.
No. I have a question regarding a definition of storage shed in the bylaw. And I believe it says 10 square meters minimum and a maximum of 11.5 square meters. Is that correct? And does this require a building permit?
If I can, through your worship, I think that the comments from Chris were similar. We're going to bring in the permit exemption area back up to the latest provision in the building code, which is 15 square meters. So it will go to Imperial 160 square feet before you need a permit. But the reason that we require a storage shed to be that minimum was to trigger the requirement for a permit. So we'd probably just use the same approach. So if you're under 15 square meters, no permit, but a storage shed as a principal building will have to be in excess of 15 square meters, so it triggers a permit. Which is identical to the way it works today.
I'm sorry, I don't know if the audio broke up for anybody else, but I really didn't hear Mr. Jackson's response.
So if I can repeat, Frank, clear as possible, the minimum will be jumped up to 15 square meters. And you don't need a building permit.
I'm sorry, I can't hear the response.
Maybe a little further from here.
Oh, I'm too close?
Yeah.
Is that better, Frank?
That's much better, thank you.
Oh, okay, so the answer is we're going to increase the minimum storage size to just over 160 square feet, but you don't need a permit for any building under 160 square feet, according to the new building code provision.
I might have the wrong term of definition here, but I think it's a situation where there's no main use on the land, for example, on a vacant lot, and maybe it's called a storage building rather than a storage shed that I'm referring to?
That's right. You cannot have an accessory building until you've had a main building, except for one storage building, as we will ultimately define it, which will be anything over 15 square meters, and maxed out
okay.
Perhaps 20 square meters for limits. So the principle will continue, but we're just going to change the numbers so they're in step with the new legislation.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else with questions on Zoom? Okay, well, I guess I'll maybe wrap it up, unless any final comments from John? I'm just like with the next step sort of thing, and the dates and...
Yes, so what we're going to do is have a notice sent out. I'll make the revisions to the documents so Carly can post them, because as soon as the notice goes out, they're going to go hunting for the documents.
Right.
So we'll recirculate them to council as well, so that they're not blindsided by questions. But then we have to confirm the meeting dates, and I can't recall if we did.
You had an August date.
I had sort of the last week of August and the first Tuesday of.
Yes, August 27th at 6 p.m. for the open house.
Right.
And then for the public meeting, it would be before our regular meeting of council on September 3rd at 6 p.m.
So unless we hear otherwise, those are the dates that are going to go in that notice.
Well, a public meeting, is that on what day of the week is that?
Tuesday, yeah, Tuesday.
Because normally, it's going way back, I know public meetings often were actually on the weekend to accommodate people who would be coming up for that.
Yeah, that
open house public meetings so that they could
attend. Well, it's up to council, but
right.
I'm not seeing this as major surgery. We're not introducing kind of a new, completely changed regime.
No, that's true.
So I'm thinking we're just going to tweak this and make it better and be sort of up to speed with what the province wants us to be in terms of the PPS and other legislation that's come around recently. So I think those dates will work and work comfortably. And most people, if they want to make submissions, they're going to likely send written submissions in, which will have I'm hoping, a reasonable time to preview before the actual council meeting. So that's the program.
So we'll have the documents by what date?
I want them in place for at least the 16th.
Okay.
In case snail mail gets there fast. But usually our tax bills come with great regularity.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've noticed that.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to mention, Dave, the public are quite welcome to send letters into the township in the meantime if they have any concerns.
Oh, yes. I mean, that's true. As John just alluded to that most of the comments will be in written form probably. And, I'm not sure about, certainly for those listening today, it's nice to have the documents in front of them before they make the comments probably, so they might wait until they actually see the documents, but yeah, I mean, certainly comments can be submitted anytime. Yeah. Well, great. Thanks very much. Covered a lot of ground there today, I think. Resolution 24-422 moved by Councillor Haskins, second by Councillor Ryland. Be resolved the Council of the Corporation Township of Keller hereby give bylaw number 2024-61, being a bylaw to confirm the proceedings of Council in first and second reading. Further read a third time and passed at open Council this 8th day of July 2024. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. 423, moved by Councilor Chekanen, second by Councilor Zulak. Be resolved by Council of the Corporation of Township McCullough, adjourn this meeting at
4:03 p.m.
To meet again on July 16th, 2024, at the call of the mayor. Call the question, all those in favor? None opposed, carried. Meeting is now adjourned.